Good morning. Today's Daf Rosh Hashanah Chavav. We're in the very bottom of Chaf Hei Amud Beis. We are starting Lememra. Last line. Gemara is picking up on the Mishnah. We started yesterday the third parak of the Masechta, three or four. The third parak of the Masechta is dedicated to the topic of Shofar, although the first Mishnah, as we started yesterday, is still on Kiddush HaChodesh. So, as I pointed out yesterday, an unusual breakup of the Prakim, right? Seemingly, the third parak should begin with the next Mishnah, which is coming up later this morning. Okay, but for whatever reason, we have one more Mishnah and another sugya in the Gemara having to do with Kiddush HaChodesh. So what we learned in the Mishnah is that when Beis Din sees the new moon, so what are they going to do under those circumstances? So what they're going to do is that they don't have to testify. In other words, they're Beis Din, they saw the new moon. They could be Mekadosh HaChodesh based on just simply the witnessing of the new moon. Really fascinating Rashi. I've highlighted it yesterday. I just quickly highlighted it again today. So Rashi says that when it comes to Kiddush HaChodesh, so you don't need Eidus, meaning you could use an aid, but you don't need Eidus. It's something special in regard to Kiddush HaChodesh. Rashi writes, Hagab Eidus HaChodesh, Loksiv Eidus. There's no mention of actual Eidus, Ela Kazera E Vekadesh. You just simply need to see it and make Kiddush HaChodesh. Good, that's the Rashi. Tosus is not happy with Rashi, but anyway, that's what we're discussing right now. What we also discussed is what if there's only Beis Din that sees a Beis Din, and let's say it's a minimalist Beis Din. Let's say there are only three people in the Beis Din, and they see the new moon. So under those circumstances, what happens? So the Mishnah says, so what you're going to have to happen now is two people are going to have to step off the bench in order to testify in front of one. And the Gemara points out that they saw it at night, because if they saw it during the day, they don't have to step off the bench. But anyway, but two people are going to step off the bench, serve now as witnesses, and testify in front of one eye, but you can't have one as a Beis Din. So the Gemara says, okay, so we're going to have to add to the Beis Din in order to make it three. Good. But what comes out over here clearly is that you can have somebody switch roles. You can have somebody who is acting as a Dayan, and then, if necessary, then become an aide. So can you do that? Can you switch roles? So it happens to be that's subject to a debate. And the Gemara now is going to be litigating this very issue, Lim Memra. So this is where we're picking it up, on the very bottom of Chaf Hei Amud Beis. So you mean to tell me, the aid na'asa dayan? So now it could very well be that an aid is going to become a dayan. In other words, you are allowed to, in fact, switch roles. So lema masis and the lo Rabbi Akiva. So then, if that's true, then our mission is not going like Rabbi Akiva did Tanya, because we learned in the following braisa. Sanhedrin shirau echad shaharagas hanefesh. Let's say that Sanhedrin actually witnessed the murder. So Rabbi Tarfon says, fine. So everybody now can go ahead and pick a role. Meaning, despite the fact that everybody saw it, but what basically you could do is now, you could divide. Now, for a capital case, you need 23 judges. So, but let's just simply say that there were a lot more than 23 people there. So fine. So everyone saw the murder. So what you're going to do now is that set aside 23 people as judges, and then you only need two witnesses. Okay, so the story really only needs to involve 25 people. But regardless, the point is that despite the fact that everyone's a witness, so what you could do is you could do a little role switching. You can move from the position of being a witness to being a judge. And that's the shita of Rabbi Tarfon. Meanwhile, Rabbi Kiva Omer, kula nasa neidim, ve'ein eid nasa dayan. And according to Rabbi Kiva, no, they're all Eidim, and Eid Einas a Dayan, and an Eid can't become a Dayan. Okay, so what comes out over here is that clearly the sheet of Rabbi Kiva is that that's it. Once you have a role, you're locked into the role, and you cannot move into another role. If you're an Eid, and in this particular scenario, all of them are Eidim, they also the murder, and they cannot transition from being an Eid to being a Dayan. So over here, so it sounds like now, our Mishnah, which is allowing for role switching, is not going like the sheet of Rabbi Kiva. That's what it sounds like. So the Gemara says, not necessarily, afilu tamer Rabbi Akiva. No, it could very well be that our mission is going like Rabbi Akiva. And ad kan lo kam Rabbi Akiva asam ala bedina nefashas de rechmana amar vishavtu aida vitzilu aida. Vikevin de chazil de kalta nafshe lo matzu chazil a izachusa. Avahach afilu Rabbi Akiva moda. So the Gemara says that the sheet of Rabbi Akiva, that you can't go from an aid to a dayan, or from a dayan to an aid, that's specific and unique to murder. Why? Because we know that when it comes to murder, so there is a mission statement. What's the mission statement? So to the best of our ability, so what we should try to do is that we should try to exonerate. Meaning the Torah says, vihitzilu, that we have a Beis Din has a mission, that somebody is up for a capital crime. So we should try to not convict, but we should try to do is we should try to acquit. Now, when all said and done, if the testimony is clear and the witnesses prove to be good witnesses, obviously we're gonna head to a conviction. But if there is something that you can acquit, so as a mission statement, as a goal, so you should try. So over here, when you have judges who saw the murder, they're going to be in a really tough position. Meaning, they saw the murder, and now they're going to be able to come from a impartial standpoint and look for reasons for acquittal. If they actually saw the murder, they're not going to look for any reasons for acquittal. Okay. Oh, okay. They could find it, but it's just going to be much harder for them. So the Gemara is suggesting now that maybe Shitas Rabbi Akiva is predicated on the fact that murder is different, and I assume it's any capital crime, but certainly if it's murder, it's going to be different because the Dayanim will not be in a position, just simply won't be in a position where they can look for an acquittal. Okay, good. But meanwhile, in other areas like over here, like Eidos HaChodesh is not that it's not that emotional. You see the moon, you say, okay, I saw the moon. Okay. All right, Adkan. That's the end of yesterday's daf, the end of yesterday's sugya, and now we begin. We begin now with Gemara's discussion regarding shofar. Okay, so there are two more prakim, right? I know we're in the third parak, but now it's kind of like an unofficial start of the third parak. So there are two more prakim here in the Masechta, and the two prakim are dedicated to shofar. What's the difference between the third and the fourth parak? So the third parak really deals with the actual shofar itself, meaning all the qualifications of a shofar. Where's the shofar coming from? What animals are coming from? What if the shofar has a crack or a hole? So all the rules and regulations regarding the shofar. So that's the third parak. At the end of the third parak, a little bit, we're going to talk about kavana and who can blow shofar. But that's the third parak. And as far as the fourth parak is concerned, so shofar on Rosh Hashanah, meaning the fourth parak, which is not terribly long. But the fourth parak is going to be discussing now exactly how to blow the shofar on Rosh Hashanah. And the fourth parak, we talk about Tfilas Musaf and how shofar fits in to Tfilas Musaf. So that is basically the outline of what we're going to be seeing from here until the end of the Masechta. And quite frankly, there's not a lot more till the end of the Masechta, just another, a little over a week. Okay. Anyway, but let's begin. Kol HaShofar's Ksherim. So the first question the Mishnah is going to be dealing with is the shofar has to come from what animal? Okay, so the assumption the Mishnah assumes that we all know is that the shofar is basically going to be the horn of an animal, which we're going to take off of an animal and hollow it out and blow through and blow. Later, the Gemara is going to point out, we blow through the narrow side, producing the sound out of the wider side. That's right. Some basic assumptions the Mishnah assumes that we already know. Just as an interesting discussion, we're not going to see it together in the Gemara. Does the shofar have to come from a kosher animal? Okay, so I will leave the question open-ended. The Gemara is not going to be discussing it. The Rishonim don't spend much time discussing it, but it sounds like a really reasonable question, meaning we're using it for a mitzvah. You would assume that it has to come from a kosher animal, although it's not perfectly clear. Let's say, for example, tefillin. So tefillin has to come from a kosher animal. And the Gemara has a drasha that tells us that. So that's something that we're clear about. But does a shofar have to come from a kosher animal? So again, I will leave that question open-ended. Anyway, but the Tanaim are going to be arguing about what animal it can or cannot come from. So the Mishnah begins, call a shofar, k'sherim chutz mishal par, mimishu karen. So a shofar can come from any animal. With notable exception, a para, a cow. The cow, mimishu karen. So it is, in fact, a Karen. Okay, now, what does that mean? It means that it's not called the shofar, meaning that when you have a horn that comes off of a cow, so it's described in the Torah as a Karen, but it's not described as a shofar, and we need a shofar. In other words, we need something that the Torah describes as a shofar. So here comes a couple of fun facts, and they're not just fun, but they're really important and critical. Okay, does the Torah tell us that I need a shofar in Rosh Hashanah? Okay, no. I know that sounds funny, but no. In other words, there is no mention of the word shofar in association to Rosh Hashanah. Okay, we're going to see this at the end of the Masechta. Rashi quotes Daf Lamedal. It's the mamish last staff of the Masechta. So we're going to see at the end that the only time that the Torah demands a shofar to be used is Yovel, but on Rosh Hashanah, Torah doesn't use the word shofar. In fact, the only way the Torah describes Rosh Hashanah is Yom Truah, and that's it. And so, but the Gemara at the end says that we have a drasha, we have a, it's a, let's call it a gzera shava. Okay. We have a limud. All right. That's easy. So we have a limud connecting, Yovel and Rosh Hashanah. So whatever is necessary and required by Yovel is going to be required by Rosh Hashanah as well. So by Yovel, and by the way, I assume everyone knows this, but just let me spell it out. When we say Yovel, what we mean is that on the 50th year, there's a mitzvah in the Torah to blow shofar on Yom Kippur. Right? That's the Yovel. There, the Torah actually asks for a shofar. Right? V'ha'avarta, Rashi quotes the pasuk, v'ha'avarta shofar trua. So I need a shofar for Yovel. And we have a limud connecting Yovel to Rosh Hashanah. Right? They're both Tishrei Yamim Tovim, and so so we have a limud connecting the two. So now, okay, let's put it all together. So, right, it's a lot of details, but it's all necessary. So now that we have a limud connecting Yovel and Rosh Hashanah, and since I require a shofar by Yovel, I also require a shofar by Rosh Hashanah. The problem with para, the horn that comes out off of a cow, is that it's only called a keren, and it's not called a shofar. And by Rosh Hashanah, I need something where the Torah describes as being a shofar. Good. That's all the shita of the Tanakhama. Rabbi Yossi, I'm a Rabbi Yossi back in the Mishnah. I'm Rabbi Yossi. If I look, call a shofar, it's Nikru Keren. What are you talking about? All the shofars are referred to as a Keren. Shenem, Rabbi Mshoch, Bekeren, Ayovel. Right? In Sefer Yehoshua. So what were they blowing? They were blowing on Keren Hayovel. Now, what is a Yovel? So as the Gemara is going to point out, the Yovel is a Dichra, it's a ram. So everything is described as a Keren. So what's the problem? In other words, so the as long as you have something which is described as a Karen, it should be fine. A shofar is called a Karen. Okay, so what we seem to have in the Mishnah over here is a very basic machlokus between the Chacham and Rav Yossi in terms of what are the requirements in order to have a kosher shofar for Rosh Hashanah. So the Gemara says, now Shapi Kama Rav Yossi. So now Rav Yossi seems to be making an outstanding point. Meaning Rav Yossi says that every shofar is called a Karen. And then he quotes the pasuk from Sefer Yehoshua. It sounds really good. So the Gemara says, okay, but in defense of the Chachamim, here's what we're going to say. V'rabbanan, kol shofar sikru shofar, v'ikru Karen. So the Chachamim would say, look, every shofar is called shofar and also called a Karen as well. Depara, but when I have the horn of a cow, Karen ikre, shofar lo ikre, so it's called the Karen, but it's not called the shofar. Dichsiv, b'chor sharo hadalo, v'karne re'em karnav. So you see that when it comes to a cow or any animal related to the cow, over here we happen to be talking about a shor, but the point is that the Torah describes it as a Karen, but not a shofar. So what we need is something where the Torah describes both as a shofar and as a Karen. So that the horn of a ram qualifies as both. In other words, we have Psukim describing it as both. But when it comes to the para, it's only described as a Karen, not as a shofar. That would be the counter argument of the Chachamim against Rabbi Yossi. Now the Gemara goes back and forth. Rabbi Yossi, I'm lachad, the para nami ikre shofar. What do you mean? I have a pasuk that tells you that the horn of a para is in fact called a shofar. How do I have it? Now over here, it's not the pasuk is not glatt. It's not smooth. It's not super clear in the pasuk that's actually describing the ram. Sorry, no, I didn't mean the ram. The horn of a cow as a shofar. Dichsiv. So we're going to read the pasuk carefully. Vatitav Hashem mishur par. So David HaMelech now is saying to HaKadosh Baruch Hu in this pasuk in Tehillim that my tefillahs are better than shor par. Shor par over here, a reference to the carbon that's brought by Adam HaRishon. Okay, and so over here the Gemara now is going to be darshaning, meaning Rabbi Yossi will tell us that if you look at the pasuk carefully, so what are you going to see? So im shor lama par, vim par lama shor. Well, which one is it? Is it a par? Is it a shor? A shor can be referring to any cattle. And meanwhile, the word par is describing a mature animal. So, but why would the Navi, or why would the Pasuk in Tehillim be describing as both? Ela my shor par, mi shofar. So really what we're doing over here now is that we're taking the two words and we're actually going to contract the two words together. And so shor par can actually be read, understood as shofar. Now, obviously, we're not changing the reading of the Pasuk, but b'derech hadrush, we're going to say that it's a reference to shofar. Vatitav Hashem Mishofar. And it's clearly in the context talking about a cow. Okay, so that would be a pasuk for Rabbi Yossi. Like I pointed out, it's not glad. It's not a smooth reading of the pasuk, but nevertheless, you could read it that way. Virabanan, the counter argument, Because Rav Masna, Damer Rav Masna, my sure par, shu gadol kapar. And the counter argument would be that this has nothing to do with the word shofar. In fact, what the pasuk in Tehillim is coming to teach us is that when Akash Baruch Hu created the first animal, the first cow, it was fully developed, it was fully mature. Right? The word par, Rashi over here writes, the word par over here is describing something which is fully mature. And when Akash Baruch Hu created it, he created its full maturity. Sounds familiar? It should sound familiar. We made this point earlier in the Masechta. Rashi quotes it in the Gemara back on Yud Aleph. Yes, the Gemara back on Daf Yud Aleph. And our Masechta made exactly this point. According to the Chachamim, that's what the Pasuk is coming to teach me. Okay, so what do we have right now? So we're basically between the Shitas of Rav Yossi and the Tanakhama of our Mishnah, whether or not the horn of a cow would be acceptable to be used as a shofar. According to the Tanakhama, it's unacceptable. According to Rav Yossi, it is acceptable. And now the back and forth between the Tanakhama and Rav Yossi. Right now in round number one, there are going to be three rounds this morning. In round number one, the Machlokas is all going to be a predicate of whether or not the Torah describes the horn of a cow as a shofar. According to Rav Yossi, it does. According to the Chachamim, it does not. And it's based on how to read a pasuk in Tehillim. Okay, that's all round number one. Round number two. Ula amar hainu taima derabanan. What's the basis of the sheet of the Chachamim that I am not allowed to use the horn of a cow? So kederav chista. The amar of chista mibnei ma ein kohen gadol nechnas bebig de zahav lifnai velifnim laavod avoda. So why does the Torah not allow the kohen gadol to go into the kodesh hakodashim on Yom Kippur wearing big de zahav? Right now, if it's funny, if you would have asked me, obviously I'm not the person to ask, but if you would have asked me, I would have said that because that's what the Torah says. Meaning the Torah in Acharei Mos giving very clear instruction in terms of how exactly the Kohen Gadol is to go into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So the Torah says that he goes in, b'bigdei lavan. Okay, not exactly the words of the Torah, but still. In other words, that's what the Torah describes. What Rav Chista's doing over here is he's giving time a dekra. In other words, he's explaining why it is. Right, he's giving time a mitzvah. And lefisha in kategor nasa sanegor. Because here's the problem. The problem is that if the Kohen Gadol were to go in with Big Day Zahav, so it would remind a Kodesh Baruch Hu, ooh, Zahav. You know what Zahav is? Oh, Zahav is connected to Egel HaZahav. Okay, so it's a kategor. It's something which is going to prosecute the Jewish people, reminding a Kodesh Baruch Hu of the Egel HaZahav. So we don't want to do that. So when we go into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, or when I say the we, here it's literally the royal we, it's a Kohen Gadol. When he goes into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, he's going to go without the Zahav, not to be reminding Akash Baruch Hu of the gold of the Egel Zav. So the Gemara says, really, really, that's the explanation why. So v'ha ika dampar. So the Gemara says, well, if we don't want to remind Akash Baruch Hu about the Egel Zav, so I got this great idea. Let's not bring in the blood of the bull, right? And again, bull over here, right, related to the cow and related to the Egel. And isn't that going to remind Akash Baruch Hu? So again, it's right. What we're really challenging over here. We're not challenging for a second, right? What to do on Yom Kippur? The Torah couldn't be any clearer. What we're challenging over here is Rav Chista's explanation. Meaning, if everything is a predicate of Ein Kategor Nasa Sanegor, so then how do you explain the blood of the bull? So he says, okay, I'll tell you how to explain it. Hovi Ishtani Ishtani. So the Gemara says, yeah, but that's not the bull itself. In other words, if we're bringing a cow into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, so that would be problematic. But over here, we're bringing the blood. Okay? And the blood is, it went through a shinui. It's not recognizable. Okay, so the Gemara says, Va'ika aron v'kapor sukrov. Oh, okay, fine. So the Kohen Gadol can't wear gold into the Kodesh HaKadoshim because Ein Kategor Nasa Sanegor. Okay, have you gone into the Kodesh HaKadoshim? Now, for all of us, the answer is no. But in other words, what we've described it numerous times throughout the Gemaras, and we know everything there is gold. The aron is gold. The kaparis is gold. The kruvim are gold. The interior plating of every wall is also gold. Okay, we can add that as well. Anyway, it's funny. The Kohen Gadol, he can't wear gold. And meanwhile, you're going to basically into a room where everything is gold. So the Gemara says, Chote bal yakrif kamrin. And the Gemara says, I know. The Gemara says, but the Ein Kategor Nasa Sanegor is going on the Kohen. In other words, he's the makriv. He's the one who's offering. If he wears it, so that would be a violation of Ein Kategor Nasa Sanegor. So the Gemara says, V'ha'ika kafel machta. The Gemara says, okay, but he's going in with the spoon and with the shovel. As we went through Yuma and gave a description, so in one hand he's going to be having the kaf, in the other hand he's going to be having the machta. If I remember correctly, the machta is in the right hand, the kaf is in the left hand. because the machta has a kol, and the kol just weighs a lot more. Regardless, the point is, and they're both made up of gold, and he's going in with them, so it's not just, quote-unquote, furniture, right, I'm saying it, right, just as an explanation, in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, but it's actually something where the makriv is coming in and carrying it. So the Gemara says, chol teba yisna kamrinan. The Gemara says, no. We're talking about the Kohen Gadol and what adorns him, what he's wearing. That's going to be an affront to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's in Kategor Nasa Senegar. So the Gemara says, Vahika big day zav mi b'chus. The Gemara says, okay. So you're telling me that anytime the Kohen Gadol is wearing gold, so it's an affront to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's in Kategor Nasa Senegar. So the Gemara says, okay, but the rest of the year, the Kohen Gadol is wearing gold. And you're telling me that we don't want to remind HaKadosh Baruch Hu of the Egal Azav. So the Gemara says, mi b'fnin kamrinan. Okay. So no, it's only going to be an affront to Kadosh Baruch Hu if he goes into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Kodesh HaKadoshim, obviously, right, by its very name, we know this. It's got the highest level of Kedusha. And there, if the Kohen Gadol were to go in with Big Day Zahav, so then it would be remind the Kadosh Baruch Hu in the most intimate area, it'll remind the Kadosh Baruch Hu of the Egal Azav. So the Gemara says, Shofar Nami Bibachutsu. So the Gemara says, okay. So now, if we can just back everything up and go to our original point, why can't we use the Shofar Vapara? So Rav Chista's explanation, or it's really Ula's explanation, based on Rav Chista, is that in Kategor Nasa Senegar. And now what we did is we limited all the way to the point where it's only going to be a problem when the Kohen Gadol wears something gold in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, then and only then is it going to be a problem? Is it going to be a difficulty of Ein Kategor Nasa Senegar? So the Gemara says, we're talking about shofar right now. You're not blowing shofar in Kodesh HaKadoshim. So the Gemara says, Kevin Delizikaranu Kibifnim Dami. So the Gemara says, yeah, but it reminds HaKadosh Baruch Hu. In other words, it's a direct communication with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Shofar is serving as a really special means of tefillah with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's like the Kohen Gadol going into the Kodesh HaKadoshim on Yom Kippur. Okay, so the Gemara says so in that regard, it's kilifnai velifnim. Okay, really interesting discussion over here. Not even the discussion. A couple of comments by Rashi and Tosfos over here. What about the Gemara's comment about the Kohen has to be adorned in it? Are we saying the same thing regarding shofar as well? So Rashi says no, it's not necessary. Rashi just simply says, look, all we need to know is that shofar is a really special means of communication. Period. Tosfos over here says no. When you're blowing the shofar, you're adorning yourself with the shofar. Okay. Anyway, so but when all said and done, so right now this is going to be our explanation in terms of what is behind the shita of the Chachamim. Why, according to the Chachamim, the Tanakam of our Mishnah, is one not allowed to use the shofar? So the answer right now is because the shofar reminds the Kadosh Baruch Hu of the Egal Azav, and Ein Kategor Nasa Senegar. Aye, the shofar is not lifnai v'lifnim, yeah, but it's kil lifnai v'lifnim. Good. This is now the second approach. The Gemara says, okay, lovely second approach. We read the Mishnah. Do you know that none of this is mentioned in the Mishnah? So the Gemara says, v'hatan mimneshu karen kamar. Yeah, the Mishnah actually, we're so funny. We're racking our head. We're breaking our teeth trying to figure out what's the pshat in the Tanakama. What do you mean? Why are we doing so? Read the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, mimneshu karen. Because it's a Karen, it's not a shofar. So the Gemara says, Chadavod Kamar. Yeah, you're right. The Mishnah is giving on one reason, but the truth of the matter is, there's multiple reasons now for the Shita of the Chachamim. One is, because it's a Karen, it's not a shofar. And two, I can't use the parah because of Ein Kategor Nasa Senegar. Chadad Ein Kategor Nasa Senegar, Vobim Neshu Karen. V'Rabbi Yosi. Okay, good. So now, we have explained the Tanakama not once, but two times over. According to Ula, now there are two reasons why the Tanakama does not allow for the usage of the horn of a cow. Now we're Rabbi Yossi, who we know argues, so he's going to be arguing now on both these points. The Gemara says that's right. Rabbi Yossi Amar Lachad Kamar Atin Kategor Nasa Senegar Hanimil Bibifnim V'Hai Shofar Mibachutzu. So as far as argument number one is concerned, Shofar is Mibachutz. It's not Mibifnim, and he's not buying into this idea that when I blow the shofar, it's Kilifnai V'Lifnim Dami. Okay, good. That's one counter argument. And the other one, Vudakamar, Mimneshu Karen, Kol Shofar's Nami Ikre Karen. Oh, and as far as, do you know it's called a Karen? Every shofar is called a Karen. And once again, we go back to the discussion we had previously. Good. That's all round number two. in terms of understanding better the machlokas between the Tanakhama and Rabbi Yossi. And here we go now, round number three. Abai Amar Hainu Tamai Durabban Shofar Amar Rachman Veloshnaim Veshosha Shofros. Veha Depara Kev Dekai Gilde Gilde Mizchazi Kishnaim Veshosha Shofros. So in a third explanation of the Shita of the Tanakhama, Abai says, the Torah demands that on Rosh Hashanah we use a shofar. And again, just to remind each other, the Torah really demands it on the Yovel of Yom Kippur, but we have a limud connecting the Yovel of Yom Kippur to Rosh Hashanah. Okay, good. Anyway, the Torah demands a shofar. Now, if you look at the word shofar, so shofar means that it's a singular. In other words, that has to be a single entity. And if you look at the horn of a cow, so what you're going to see is that basically it's layered. In other words, every year you have another layer of the material growing on top of it. And so therefore it's kind of like, it's not one entity, but it's just multiple entities. It's a composite of various layers. And the Torah does not want that. The Torah wants something which is a single entity, a singular entity. And again, the Gemara says, okay. Once again, a lovely explanation. Why are we racking our heads for an explanation? Go back to the Mishnah. Read the Mishnah. The Tanakhama says, you know why he can't use it? Because the Torah describes it as a Karen, and we don't need a Karen, we need a shofar. So the Gemara says, Chad Avod Kamar. Again, what we're going to say is that really both reasons are in play. Chad de shofar, Echad Amar Rechman, Velo Shnaim, Veshlosha Shofros. So one reason, the unwritten reason of the Mishnah, is because the Torah demands something which is singular, and not something which is a composite. And Vod, Mimnei Shu Karen, and on top of that also, the Torah, when describing the parah, calls it a Karen, and we don't want a Karen, we want a shofar. Okay. And Rav Yossi. And now, so we have two reasons, according to Abaye, we have two reasons to explain Rav Yossi. So now we need a reason to explain, we have two reasons to explain the Tanakhama. Now we need a reason for Rav Yossi. For Rav Yossi, Amalacha, Dekamar, Shofar, Echad, Amar, Rechman, Veloshnaim, Veshosha, Shofros, Kevin, De Mechabri, Adade, Chadu. So as far as explanation in terms of the composite shofar, what Rav Yossi will tell you is that I'm not buying that explanation. Meaning, okay, so it grows in layers. Very, very nice. When all said and done, it's all connected. It's all united. In other words, okay, fine. It may be in layers, but who cares? Mechabre, it's all connected. And with the Karmar, Mimeshu Karen, call shofar, it's not Mikre Karen. And as far as the second argument of the Torah describes the parah as a Karen, every shofar is called a Karen. Okay, good. Okay. Adkan, that really takes us to the end of the sugya. I know we have a little bit more before we get to the next Mishnah, but the Gemara now has concluded its point in that the machlokus in the Mishnah between the Tanakhama and Rabbi Yossi in terms of whether or not I could use the horn of a parah, the Tanakhama says you cannot. And according to Rabbi Yossi, you can. And what's the nekuda machlokus? So we have three different nekudos. There are three different points in terms of how to explain the machlokus between the Tanakhama and Rabbi Yossi. There was a Stam Gemara. The Gemara didn't ascribe it to anybody. The Gemara just simply said one reason. Then Ul give a second reason, in Kategor Nasa Senegar. And then there's a third reason of Abaye, in that Abaye says that the horn of a parah is made up of layers, and the Torah wants us to have one unified item. Okay. From this point until the next Mishnah, we're going to run through it, I'd say, a little bit quicker. The Gemara is going to be going through basically a little bit of wordplay. In other words, there are certain words that are used that are difficult to translate, difficult to define, and so the Gemara is going to give definition to them. My mashma, right? The three lines down after the lines start getting wide. My mashma da hayuvla lishna de dichrahu. Okay, so a couple times, and today we talked about the yovel, right? The pasuk in Yoshua, bimshoch bekeren hayovel. So we're blowing in the horn of the yovel. So what is the yovel? Okay, so it's a ram. Okay, but how do we know that? So the Gemara says that's exactly the Gemara's question. My mashma da hayuvla lishna de dichru. The Tanya, the Gemara says, we have a braisa. So Amar Rabbi Kiva kashalachli la Aravia. So Rabbi Kiva went to, let's call it Saudi Arabia. Okay. And hayukorin la dichra yuvla. And so what he would do is that he would hear them describing the dichra, the ram, as yuvla. No. Okay, fine. And it's a little bit strange that we're using other languages to help us understand Lashna Kodesh. It's not so strange. Meaning it doesn't happen that often, but it happens, right? Totafos being a primary example of where we use other languages. The Gemara used other languages to help us understand what they are. Okay. So the Amar Rabbi Kiva kashalach leGalia. So now he's going on a trip to Galia. Your guess is better than mine. So hayukorin lanida gamuda. So a woman who was menstruating, so they described her as a gamuda. My gamuda? Gemula dami baala. And the word means that she separated from her husband. Okay. V'amar Rabbi Kiva kashach la Africa. Okay. Sounds like Africa. So how you karen lema'a kisita. So a description of ma'a is, I'm sorry. When they were referring to a particular coin, they called it the kisita. Lamai nafkamina. Lefrushe mea kisita da'araisa. Mea danke. Okay, good. Now, when you hear the term mea kisita da'araisa, so that's a reference to mea danke. It's a type of coin. Am Rebbe kishalach lekarche, Yam Rebbe went to go visit, I don't know, some island. So how you call it lemechira kira? So referring to a sale, so they call it a kira. They left out the mem. So lamai nafkamina lefrushe asher karisi li. Okay. So at the end of Sefer Bereishis, that I purchased. Am Rav Shimon Malakish kishalach lechum kan nisharia. How you call it lekala ninfe ulatarnigol sechvi. Couple of other words that you're going to hear that you may not know the meaning. So as far as a bride, so the word that I heard them describe it as a ninfe. And for a tarnigol, for a rooster, they called it a sechvi. So the kala ninfe my kra yefe nof misos kala aretz. Now how did they get from kala to ninfe? So yefe nof. Okay. It's not a perfect match, but it's close. Ula tarnigol sechvi amar Rav Yehuda amar Rav Yibayse amar Rav Yishua ben Levi my kra. Mishas betuchos chachma o minasan la sechvi bina. So who put in the the Gemara is going to explain. So Mishas Betuchas Chachma Eloklaios. That's a reference to the kidneys. So the kidneys are there to give us Chachma. Okay. The Gemara numerous times describes the kidneys as that which is, gives us Eitza. Okay. O Minas on the Sechvi Bina Zutarnigol and the Sechvi has Bina. So that's a reference to the Tarnigol. Okay. Right, and the bina is the ability to distinguish between one thing and another thing. The tarnigol has the ability to distinguish between night and day. Okay, Levi ikla luasra asagav lekame. Levi went to a particular town and he meets an individual. Amar le kavan palnaya. So okay, so the dialect over there is a little bit strange, and so the person now is going to Levi and he basically has a complaint. He's lodging a formal complaint. So somebody did something to me, but he used the word koveya. Now I'll give it away. In other words, basically he said, somebody stole from me. But instead of using the word gazlan ganov, he said the word kava. Okay, lo havayada my kamar. Okay, so Levi was not familiar with this dialect. He wasn't familiar with this term. He didn't know what he was saying. So also shal be midrasha. So he goes to the base medrash, right? And he asks them. So amrule, so they said to him, gazlan, amalacha. Oh. So he asked the locals, and the locals said, "Oh, he's saying that somebody stole from me." So dichsiv ha'yikva adam alakim. And the truth of the matter is that a pasuk in Malachi supports this as well. Okay, now, Levi didn't know the pasuk in Malachi. I don't know. I mean, you have to say he did, but anyway. So amale rava mi barnash le ravashi have hasam have amina le hechi kavach b'may kavach v'may kavach u'memela have yadana. So Rav Ashi says, I'm just giving you some practical advice. If I were there, somebody said a word to me. It sounded a little bit strange. So I would ask enough follow-up questions where I'd figure it out. Right? I would ask questions like, how did he kovea you? With what did he kovea you? Why did he kovea you? And by asking enough follow-up questions, so I would have figured it out. V'iyu sever milsa di suri kamerle. And as far as Levi was concerned, so Levi was not sure what it meant, and any of follow-up questions would have been really uncomfortable and awkward, meaning it could very well be that Kovea could be a reference to some sort of intimate act. Okay. And then you're asking follow-up questions, and you're right, you may not be prepared for the answers. Okay. So, lo hava yadei rabbanan maisei rugin. More on this topic, and right up until the Mishnah. We're going to just keep doing this. Words that are unusual, difficult to translate. And so the Gemara is going to give us some like mini lexicon. So the Chachamim did not know what the word Sirugin is. Shamur la Amta de Bei Rebbe. So encounter the Amta de Bei Rebbe. Amta de Bei Rebbe. So a popular figure throughout the Gemara. So literally the maidservant of Rebbe, but she knew. She knew things. All right. She features prominently in the Gemara regarding the death of Rebbe. All right. The Gemara Ksuvah Staf Kuf Dalet. So she features prominently over there, and she comes up a number of times throughout Shas. And she knows things, and you'll see. So Shamu alamta de Rabbi de Chazisna Rabbanan Dava Ayla Paske Paske. So when the Talmidei Chachamim were coming to Shir, so they didn't all come together, and I even add on time, but they sauntered in, one after another, but like with significant pauses between them as they were entering. So Amr Lehu, so she's giving the boys Musar. Now I say boys, probably they were young men, but still, she was giving them Musar. An Masai Tenechnasim Serugim Serugim. This is how you're coming into Shir, you're coming in. One after another, after another. Everyone needs to come early, and everyone needs to come on time. Okay. Lo hava yada rabbanan mai chalug lugos. Okay. So another term that the chacham didn't know what it meant. So yumachad shamu lamta debe rabbi dechasus lahu gaver dekam mivader parpechine. So amta debe rabbi sees an individual and he's spreading out parpechine, some sort of plant. So armale ad masayata mifazer chalug logach. Oh, and she uses the word. She uses the word in context. And now when you hear the word in context, and so now you know what it means. Okay, good. Lo havi yadon rabbanan mai sasala v'tara me'aka. So the pasuk in Mishle, using the word sasala, the chachamim didn't know what it meant, right? But if you do it, whatever sasala is, tarama mecca. So it's going to elevate you. It's going to uplift you. But it's be important to know what that means. So yumachad shamu lamta debe rabbi dava amr lahu gavra dava kamehafech b'sa'arei. Okay, so she sees a guy and he's playing with his hair. He's twirling his hair. And she says, you need to stop that. Right? Oh, so you see what the word masalsa means is basically to turn around, to turn it over, turn it over. And now, in the context of the pasuk in Mishle, so salsala is talking about Torah. Meaning that what you're supposed to do is that you're supposed to not only go over the Torah, but go over it again and turn it over and turn it over. Hafachba v'hafachba. Okay. And to Roma Mecca, and it's going to uplift you. Lo hava yadi rabbanan mai v'tata'a ke b'metate, hashmeid. Okay, pasuk Yishayahu, and the Chachamim did not know what the word tata'a meant. So yumachad shamu lamta debe rebi da'avar amal chaverte. So now they overhear a conversation with amta debe rebi, where she says to somebody, "Shkule teta teha v'tate besa." Take that broom and sweep the house. So now the chachamim say, "Okay, good. Now we know what it means." They go back to the pasuk in Yishayahu. Okay, in the pasuk in Yishayahu, it's unfortunately not meant well, but at least they now know what it meant. Lo havayadi rabbana mai hashlech al Hashem yahavech v'hu yichal kaleka. Pasuk in Tehillim, where the chachamim did not know what the word yahavech means. You'll throw your Yahavech on a Kadosh Baruch Hu and he'll support you. Okay, what does that mean? So Amar Rabba Bar Bachana Yumachad Hava Azlina. Hava Azlina Bahade Ahutaya. So we were walking together with a Arab. Hava Darina Tuna. And we were carrying a really big load. And the Amar Li, and he, the Arab, said to me, Shkol Yahavech. Oh, so take your load, Vishadeg Malay, and put it on my camel. Oh, okay, fine. And so what comes out over here very clearly is that the word Yahavech is a reference to load. And basically we are, now we go back to the pasuk in Tehillim, we are to unload on a Kadosh Baruch Hu, meaning take all of our problems and share them with the Kadosh Baruch Hu, tell Kadosh Baruch Hu of our problems. V'hu yichal kaleka. Okay. Matkan. Okay, so obviously that served as a sidebar. All that because we weren't sure what the word yuvla meant, and yuvla is a reference to dichra, it's a reference to that of Aram. And so once we had one word that needed definition, so the Gemara gave us an assortment of words altogether, right? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, I counted. 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. 11 different words that now the Gemara defined. Okay, let's go back. We are now in the Mishnah. Shel for Shel Rosh Hashanah. Shel Yal Pashut Upiv Metzupa Zahav. Vishtei Chatzotzos Min Etzadim. Shel for Mach V'chatzotzos Mekatzro. Shem Mitzos Ayom B'Shofar. So here the Mishnah gives us a simple description of what the shofar of Rosh Hashanah is going to look like. So interesting over here, it's not exactly what we do. So it's shel ya'el pashut. So what you're going to do is you're going to take the horn of a ya'el pashut, the ya'el English antelope, deer, something like that. Okay, whatever. So But the point over here is that it's a straight horn. It's not a bent horn. Okay? I understand that's not what our shofars look like. Stay tuned because by the end of the daf today, in a couple minutes from now, So we will get to the conclusion in terms of what our shofars need to look like. But anyway, but according to the Mishnah, so it's going to be straight. It's a straight horn. Upiv mitzupa zahav. And its mouth is going to be plated in gold. And on top of that, there's also going to be chatzotzos. Chatzotzos are trumpets. Just a great way to think about it. A shofar is a natural product, meaning it's a horn of an animal. A chatzotzros, so those are man-made, right? Trumpets, right? What you and I, right? Doesn't have to be made out of brass, but, right, like brass trumpets. Good. So on Rosh Hashanah, so in the Beis HaMikdash, so they're blowing both with the shofar and chatzotzros. So later on, right, in tomorrow's daf, so we're going to come to the realization that this is specifically in the Beis HaMikdash, meaning this is not outside the Beis HaMikdash, right? As we all have experienced, you go to shul on Rosh Hashanah, so it's only one item that's being blown, and of course it's the shofar. Okay, anyway, so the shofar's in the middle, the chatzotzos are flanking the shofar, and when you're blowing, so all three are going to be blown together. A little bit confusing, admittedly. But then what's going to happen is that the chatzotzos are going to cut short and the shofar is going to extend. Why? Because mitzvah sayam b'shofar. Because that's the mitzvah sayam, to blow shofar. Now, v'tanios, now on atanios, where we're blowing. Now, why are we blowing on atanios? So because we want to get everyone together. In other words, tanios, obviously, we're petitioning Akash Baruch Hu, we're davening. We all want to daven together. We're going to be blowing so that everyone assembles. Okay, so bishel zecharim kefufim upim mitzupa kesef. So it's going to be a bent shofar, that of a ram. And again, it's going to be plated in here the plating is silver, not gold. And they're going to be chatzotzos in the middle. So shofar mekatzav, chatzotzos ma'aricho, shemitzos yom bechatzotzos. So here, the key horn that's being blown is the trumpet, not the animal horn. And so therefore, it will feature prominently in two respects. One, it's going to be in the middle, flanked by the shofars. And two, it's the one that's going to extend the shofar, is the one that's going to be cut short. Okay. Shavel ha-yovel Rosh Hashanah, litkio lebrachos. Now, as far as yovel and Rosh Hashanah are concerned, so they're equal. Now, again, when we say yovel, what we mean is the Yom Kippur of the yovel year, where there we're going to be blowing shofar. And what it sounds like, pretty clearly, is that as far as the mitzvah of shofar is concerned, so they're on equal footing with one another. We're going to be giving clear descriptions later in our Masechta in terms of how exactly to blow shofar in Rosh Hashanah. And so whatever those requirements are for Rosh Hashanah, they're also going to be true for Yovel as well. And Brachos as well. So we're going to learn later in the Masechta that on Rosh Hashanah, there's a special tefillah, a special Shemona Esrei that's designed for Rosh Hashanah. So on the Yovel year, on Yom Kippur, the Yovel year, we're going to be borrowing that very same Shemona Esrei. It's not 18 Brachos, but you understand. The nusach of whatever we're saying on Rosh Hashanah, we're going to be moving and transposing to Yovel as well. Rav Yehuda Amar Rosh Hashanah Token B'Shal Zechar Yovel's B'Shal Ye'elim. Now Rav Yehuda says, no, they're not the same. On Rosh Hashanah, we're going to be using a ram's horn. On Yovel, we're going to be using the Ya'el, the straight Ya'el, on the Yovel of Yom Kippur. Okay, Amar Rabbi Levi. So, in the Mishnah, so we have a description of how shofar is blown in the Beis HaMikdash on Rosh Hashanah, on a fast day. And then the second half of the Mishnah, so we're given a description of the shofar of Rosh Hashanah versus shofar of Yovel. According to the Tanakhama, there's no versus. It's the same. It's the same exact shofar, Shemona Esrei, it's all the same. And according to Rabbi Yehuda of our Mishnah, no, they're not the same. On Rosh Hashanah, it's B'Shel Zecharim. And on Yovel, it's B'Shel Ye'elim. Rosh Hashanah, it's bent, and Yom Kippur of the Yovel year, it's going to be straight. Amar Rebbe Levi, mitzvah shel Rosh Hashanah v'shel Yom Kippurim, b'kfufin, v'shel kol Hashanah b'pshutim. So the Gemara now is going to give us another shita on that of Levi. Okay, it's a little bit strange, a little bit unusual that Levi is giving us a third shita, meaning Levi's an Amara, but he's an early generation Amara. Let's assume he had a Mesora. And his position is that on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, so we're going to be using kefufim. We're going to be using a bent shofar. On the rest of the year, when we say rest of the year, we mean fast days. So there we're going to be using something straight. The Hatanan. Gemara says, okay, let's go back over the Mishnah. Shofar shel Rosh Hashanah shel Ya'al Pashut. Shofar shel Rosh Hashanah shel Ya'al Pashut. So I go back to the Mishnah And I'm noting that the Mishnah says that on Rosh Hashanah we're using a straight horn. So the Gemara says, Hudamar ki aitana. The Gemara says, yeah, but he has another Tana that supports his viewpoint. The Tanya we learned, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Rosh Hashanah, you talk, Mishal Zacharim Kefufim, V'yavlos Bishel Ye'elim. Okay, so here in this Brisa, a Shita of Rabbi Yehuda. And the Shita of Rabbi Yehuda, now I know in the Mishnah we had the Shita of Rabbi Yehuda, but here in the Brisa, so we're hearing it, his Shita regarding Rosh Hashanah versus Yovel. On Rosh Hashanah bent, on Yovel, Shel Ye'elim. So the Gemara says, V'lema hilchasek Rabbi Yehuda. So why doesn't he just simply say that? Halachasek Rabbi Yehuda. Yeah, Martilchasek Rabbi Yehuda. Havamina filo shel Yovel. Nami ka Rabbi Yehuda svirle. Kamash malan. Yeah. If he would have said the halachasek Rabbi Yehuda, go back over the Brice that we just learned together. In the Brice, Rabbi Yehuda says that in Rosh Hashanah, you blow shel zecharim, and on Yovel shel Ye'elim. So if he would have just simply said the halacha falls like Rabbi Yehuda, I would have thought that not only is it true by Rabbi Yehuda regarding Rosh Hashanah what to do, but also on Yovel what to do. But that's not Levi Shita. Levi represents a modified version of Rabbi Yehuda, notably that you're going to be using a ben shofar both on Rosh Hashanah and on Yom Kippur. So b'maika miflegi, the Gemara wants to know, what is the nekuda machlokas over here? Ma saver Rosh Hashanah, kama dechaya finish daite tvei male. Over Yom Kippur, I'm coming to Pashin in Ishtaite Tvei Male. So according to Shita's Rabbi Yehuda, meaning not Levi Shita, but Rabbi Yehuda Shita. So Rabbi Yehuda says, Rosh Hashanah, you want a bent horn, and on Yom Kippur of Yovel, you want a straight. So he says it's very simple, because the shape of the horn is going to speak to our own disposition, right? The kind of mode, the kind of mentality that we have going into these days. On Rosh Hashanah, we want to be bent. Look at Rashi over here. Kama dekayif inish b'tfila so. So this is our position, our posture during davening. So panav kavushim la'aretz tfei adif, that when you're facing down, it's better. Mishum vayu einei v'libisham. Hilkach Rosh Hashanah, I'm reading Rashi. Hilkach Rosh Hashanah d'l'tfila la'haskar akedas yitzchak ba be'inan kfufim. On Rosh Hashanah, where we're davening, we make reference to Akedas Yitzchak, so we want to be looking down. However, Yovel Shehin Likro Dror Binim Pshutim. On the other hand, when it comes to Yom Kippur, so what's happening when we blow shofar in Yom Kippur? So that's freedom. In other words, everything goes back to its original. The Avadim go free. The land goes to its original owner. So basically, everyone's now in an erect position because okay, everything's being fixed. Everything's being corrected. Everything's going back to the original. Okay, so this is all as per the Shita Rav Yehuda. So on Rosh Hashanah, the posture is bent. On Yovel of Yom Kippur, the posture is straight. And the horn is going to reflect all that. Mar Saver, back to the Gemara, two lines from the bottom. Mar Saver, Rosh Hashanah, Kama de Pashin, Inish Daite, Tfei Male. Uvetanias, Kama de Kai, Finish Daite, Tfei Male. So, and according to the Tanakama on Rosh Hashanah, so the more postured you are, the better. Okay, straighter is better on Rosh Hashanah. Why? Meaning this is the exact opposite of that of Rav Yehuda. Well, good. But again, I'm going back to Rashi. Look at the last Rashi on the Amud. Rashi writes, Mishum nasal avinu kapayim, because basically we're reaching out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Hilkach Rosh Hashanah bipshutim dilatfilahu. Okay, good. So that's what we want. We're kind of stretching out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Again, in our limited understanding of what that would look like. Udi Yom Kippurim nami mishum deshavya b'gzereshava. Now Rashi clearly had the girsa that in this explanation, whatever is going to be true for Rosh Hashanah is going to be true for Yom Kippur as well. Despite the fact that as far as the Svara is concerned, it's not the same Svara, meaning Yom Kippur, we're not reaching out to Kadosh Baruch Hu, and Yom Kippur, Yovel, we're blowing shofar so that everything goes back to its original. Okay, but regardless, the point is that whatever is true by Rosh Hashanah is going to be true by Yom Kippur as well. Now, v'taniyos delichnufya lo ichbat lan. So, and as far as Tanis is concerned, So Rashi writes over here, we really don't care. Meaning, it could be strained, it could be bent. But Rashi then points out, so if we don't care, so why would we want it bent? So, v'avdina kefufim le'keira. So we're just gonna have it bent just to show a contrast. Meaning that according to the Tanakama, Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur are gonna be straight. Okay, so on the Tanis, we just want to do it a little bit differently, just to show a contrast. Okay, now. Did I finish reading the Gemara? I think so. Uvitanios kamitikai finishtaiti tfeimale. Okay. Now what the Gemara has not done, meaning what the Gemara has done is given a svara for the sheet of Rav Yehuda. The Gemara gave a svara for the sheet of the Chachamim, of the Tanakama. But there's one more sheet, which parenthetically, by the way, is the accepted viewpoint, and that of Levi. Levi says that mitzvah, v'shal Rosh Hashanah v'shal Yom Kippurim b'kefufim v'shal kol Hashanah b'pshutim. So what's that? What's that sheet? So again, I go back to Rashi. Rashi writes, Ula Rebbe Levi is like Rav Yehuda de la tefillah b'nin kefufim. So on one hand, so Levi holds like Rav Yehuda that what we want is a posture of being bent over. Uva Yom Kippurim svira le deshava yovel l'Rosh Hashanah k'rabanan. Hilkach tavar b'nin kefufim. Ah, so now what about in Yovel? So he holds that the limud, right? The connection between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. So since Rosh Hashanah demands that the shofar be bent over, because that's the proper posture for Rosh Hashanah, so therefore, via the limud, we're going to say the same thing regarding Yom Kippur as well. Okay. That's the, that would be the svara behind the shita of Levi as per Rashi's explanation. Okay. And if you want to see more on this, you can see Tosfos. Anyway, Adkan, that takes us to the end of the daf. Let's quickly recap. Let's review. We just tackled the last part of the first mission of the third parak, which talks about the members of Sanhedrin able to leave the bench and serve as an aide, and basically you can switch roles from being an aide to a dayan, from being a dayan to an aide. Lichora, that is not in agreement with the sheet of Rabbi Kiva. Rabbi Kiva says that you have aidim who see a murder. So machlokes between Rabbi Tarfon and Rabbi Kiva. According to Rabbi Kiva, aid ina as a dayan. Once you're an aide, you cannot become a dayan. And our Mishnah, Lechora, doesn't agree with Rabbi Kiva. The Gemara says, not necessarily. Rabbi Kiva could just be talking about murder, v'itzilu a'eda. It's different over there. Okay, that was our first discussion of this morning. Then, our next discussion, we start with shofar. The remaining Mishnayos over here is going to be talking about the mitzvah of shofar. So the first issue that we dealt with this morning is a really simple issue of the shofar's coming from what kind of animal? So according to the Tanakama, any animal but a cow. According to Rav Yossi, can even come from a cow. What's the machlokes between the Tanakama and Rav Yossi? So the Mishnah actually, it gives us a svara that according to the Tanakama, the horn of a cow is not described as a shofar. It's only called a keren. And we need something called a shofar. So and Rav Yossi's counter argument is, what are you talking about? Every shofar is called a keren. Okay, and the back and forth between the Tanakama and Rav Yossi. And the Gemara gives a couple of other explanations in terms of how to understand the machlokas between the Tanakhama and Rav Yossi in addition to that which was given to us in the Mishnah. One svara that's given in the Gemara by Ula is in kateger nasa sanegor, that if I were to use the horn of a para, it would remind the Kadosh Baruch Hu of the Cheta Ego. Okay, in the back and forth in terms of why Rav Yossi dismisses that argument. And the another way to explain it is that of Abaye. Abaye says that the issue is that the horn of a cow is actually layered, and we need something which is one piece. It's one entity. Okay, and the back and forth in terms of the debate over there. As far as the remaining section of Chav Vavam and Aleph going well into Chav Vavam and Beis, so as a miniature lexicon in the Gemara with words that are hard to translate. 11 words I counted in total. Okay. And then finally, The last mission that we covered is the shape of the shofar. Should it be bent or should it be straight? So there are two shitas in the mission. There's a third shita in the Gemara, that of Levi. And the Gemara gave explanations to the Tanakama, to Reb Yehuda. And Rashi then ended up giving a hybrid explanation in order to explain the shita of Levi.